I thought I would talk with you today about freedom, because we celebrated July 4th this past week, and because we need to know what freedom is for ourselves and for others. Many people live in outer prisons. We know of the kind of issues that have arisen in relation to incarcerated persons. And now we face within this country an awareness of what's happening with undocumented immigrants in detention centers. And so we know to some degree, some of us more than others, what it might be like to be living in prison conditions. And we need to respond to that. We need to respond to the sense of freedom for all, and to know at the same time that justice has to be observed, the rule of law has to be observed. We're not lawless in our desires, but we are looking for freedom in the presence of justice. So that relates to the outer aspect of freedom, which is very much about the founding of this country, the willingness to overthrow oppression, the willingness to make a stand for oneself, to say, these conditions that I'm living with are not tolerable, and so I will do what's needed to overcome them, in which produced the Declaration of Independence and produced the Revolutionary War and all that followed of the Constitution and all that followed of the documents that are the founding documents of this country. But we know that as part of our collective history, and we're less attentive to the invisible prisons that we live in and that others live in. The invisible prisons are created by two things. They're created by social and relational injustice that goes unnoticed by us. Things that we do that we don't pay attention to, that foster the lack of freedom of somebody else. We don't notice it because we're used to it. We're used to it in the ways that prejudice allows us to be used to it. So among the things that we need to overcome is whatever oppression we participate in through not noticing, And not noticing can take place on a group level. For example, we cannot notice because it's not immediately within our sphere of daily contact what is happening to the indigenous peoples of this country or what's happening to their sacred sites. We don't see them, so we don't notice. Or we can notice what's happening in relation to the exposure of racial prejudice which has preceded or come forward from slavery days related to African Americans. We know the things that we are given to know when they appear in the news media, but we don't notice the more subtle things that may be the legacies in our own attitudes, in our own consciousness, when we hear of certain events, when we notice certain events, when we take part in community life. So when we are desiring to be free, we have to notice the freedom that's not being accorded to others, because we don't notice that they're not free. If a person is not free to live the life that they're choosing, if they're not free to be educated in the way that they would like, if they're not free to bring up their children in the way that they would like, if they're not free to break out of a cycle of poverty that they would choose, then they're not free. And so if we don't notice those things, if we let them disappear from our consciousness, we're living with partial awareness of what freedom is, and the rest is obscured by our blinders to noticing those who are not free and to caring about it. I'm not saying that one has to do something in terms of petitioning or protesting or becoming active in the outer way. All of that is useful for you if that's what you feel called to. I'm talking about an inner consciousness of freedom. And what I'm trying to do here is to move from the outer level to the inner level, because freedom and the awareness of those who are not free brings up the question of relationship and brings up the question of compassion. If we are not aware of those who are imprisoned by indifference, by neglect, by laws that are unfair or inequitable, by our lack of awareness, we contribute to the problem. So let me take this matter of freedom that's emerging from our consciousness of July 4th to the next level. One of the main things that causes us to lack compassion for other human beings is not knowing the suffering they're going through. If we don't notice their suffering, we're not aware of the prison they live in. It's that. We look at their outer behavior, maybe we look at their outer behavior, but we don't know because we're not looking to know what's the cause of their outer behavior. And that in itself contributes to our willingness to become part of the problem of oppression. If we are lacking in compassion because we are accusing somebody of doing something, we're contributing to the problem of oppression. We have to know, just like we need to know about the suffering of the people on reservations or the suffering that's caused by the decimation of sacred sites that have belonged for hundreds, if not thousands of years, to certain tribes, just as we need to understand that those who are accosted in the streets of this country because of the color of their skin belong to us and we belong to them. And there are all kinds of, phrases that we use commonly now about that knowledge. It's a matter of keeping it in our awareness. It's not a matter of knowing it in a distant way. It's a matter of knowing it up close. But I'm saying to you, those that you can see because they're in your life are the ones that are given to you to operate with, to understand with compassion. Those you feel annoyed with, irritated with, judgmental of, rejecting of, or offended by because they've done something to you that you would rather not have them do, their behavior is not what you would like them to do or to be. They're not behaving, let's say, kindly towards you, or they're behaving in aggressive ways, or they're behaving in rejecting ways. We have all kinds of reasons for feeling offended by people. And all of those reasons diminish one by one our lack of compassion, every single one of them. And when our lack of compassion diminishes, we become aligned with the forces that create oppression rather than the forces that dissolve oppression. What we need to do in order to reverse this, in order to acquire more compassion, is to observe through our desire to observe the suffering that people go through and the prisons that they live in. What are the prisons that people live in? They're the prisons of inescapable fears, feelings about the self, the sense of hopelessness, the sense of intractable dilemmas that one feels are inescapable. These are the prisons that people live in. And we don't see that. We feel judgmental of behavior, but we don't see the prison that somebody is in. And we need to stop. We need to stop and see the suffering that people are going through. There's a great deal of spiritual life that is that's represented as spiritual life, that fosters the desire to experience joy and to experience that which is beneficial, the fruits of spirituality that is beneficial to one's consciousness. And there's nothing wrong with that. We need more joy. and we need to feel more peace and more of a sense of safety in our own life. But if we're doing it at the expense of not recognizing the suffering that exists within ourselves or within others, we're not achieving anything. We're achieving an illusion, not a reality. Because the human condition, our own and that of other beings, needs to be fully embraced in its reality in order to transcend it. It can't happen in a different way. It can't happen that you elect or I elect or somebody elects, I'll just go for the easy spirituality. I'll go for the easier time. That works for a while, but it can't work in the end, because in the end one has to overcome suffering, overcome illusion, overcome imprisonment especially, which is why I'm talking about this following the July 4th holiday. We need to overcome our own imprisonment in our own dilemmas that feel intractable, and we do this through the aspiration to first be aware of how we're contributing to those dilemmas, to be self-aware, to let go of blame of anybody else who's doing something to us, and second, to affirm our connection with the divine core of our being so that we have a place to go with these dilemmas. Just being aware is not enough. Just being aware is essential, but it's not enough. Being aware allows us to be honest with ourselves, not about what somebody is doing to me, but what I'm doing to myself, what you are doing to yourself, by the maintenance of certain attitudes. And then we bring that limitation of our own consciousness to the divine and ask for guidance about the path to freedom. If we were to look at every human being as suffering with the same issues, the same dilemmas as we are, the same imprisonment, we would begin to create a world of peace, because the world of peace is based on compassion. And the world of peace is based on the recognition of how behavior is generated by limitation and often by illusion. So we start with where we can start. We start by looking at prisons, the outer prisons, of course, the outer prisons of poverty, the outer prisons of economic inequality, the outer prisons of incarceration, and the racial prejudice that embodies for so many thousands of people, and the outer prisons of now detention centers, and what that's doing to our consciousness of what this country is about. That those facts that we are witnessing in the news or have been witnessing in recent months, those are not just facts about buildings or about children or about inhumanity of people towards children and towards other beings. It is about the facts, but it's more than that. Those facts are bringing to us a diminishment of the ideals that we're holding of our country. It's diminishing our consciousness of what this country can be. And so too do we look at other people individually. When we feel judgmental and don't understand their suffering, we diminish the possibility of who they can be and of who we can be. We diminish ourselves by our willingness to look at behavior without understanding the suffering that someone is going through. We diminish our own freedom to be and the freedom to be of someone else by translating who they are into how they're acting. We, in those instances, help to diminish freedom for all. We don't like to think of ourselves as aligning with oppression, and none of us, I believe, are doing it intentionally. We're not. We're not trying to harm people. But our neglect of seeing suffering and our indifference to the absence of compassion is a form of aligning with the forces that create oppression. A willingness to oppress others comes from not perceiving them as human, not perceiving them as equally human, generates the willingness to be part of the oppressive force. And mostly, those who are, we might consider to be part of the oppressive force, don't consider themselves to be that way. No. People don't say, I am an oppressor. They say, I'm doing what I need to do in order that such and such happens. And so the such and such is some goal or some idea or some ideal that they're holding about why detention centers need to be the way they are. What is it that's trying to be achieved? The person isn't saying, I'm desiring to be an oppressor. They're saying, this is why I'm doing it. And in our own inner consciousness, we have to hear, in order to be straight with ourselves, are they speaking with compassion about the other person that this, whatever this is being done to? In that justification? Or are they speaking with the absence of identification with the suffering that someone else is going through? Because therein lies the story, our own story and that of other people. The heart and the person who's connected to their heart will identify with the suffering of humanity. That doesn't mean getting swallowed up by it. It doesn't mean drowning in it. It means living the life of the heart. Those who are influenced by other thoughts, other ideals, other energies that take them out of their heart are less likely to experience compassion, which is the willingness to be in someone else's point of view. So, if you understand that principle, then you need to look at those in your life presently where compassion is lacking because you're looking at behavior. Maybe there's only one person that that applies to. Maybe there aren't a lot of people. Or maybe it's a group of people that act in a certain way. Maybe people that you speak to in terms of your deepest sense of spiritual truth, when you speak authentically, maybe they don't respond in a receptive way. Maybe they're closed to you. Maybe they don't agree that spirituality is real. Maybe they feel that they don't value what you're saying. Let's take that example. Somebody doesn't value what you're saying. So the smaller self gets caught up into the judgment about not feeling valued. I'm not feeling valued. I feel hurt. Or maybe you're past feeling hurt. Maybe you just register, I'm not feeling valued. Or maybe you register, I'm not feeling understood. Okay, that's not uncommon. We can all identify with that. Are we experiencing their suffering of the person who's devaluing our experience? Mostly not. Mostly, we are not seeing the prison that they're in. Mostly, we're paying attention to their behavior as it impacts us. If we saw the prison that they were in, we would know the suffering that created that devaluing. Because devaluing of another's beliefs or deepest feelings is not part of their soul. It is never part of anyone's essential being to devalue another. How could it be? We are all one being. We resonate with each other. We vibrate with each other. We are part of each other in all ways. How could it be? It couldn't be. So, if we get caught up in the physical, energetic, emotional, behavioral way of responding to being devalued or being rejected or and feel hurt and don't understand the suffering, we're contributing to the problem of the lack of freedom. Their lack of freedom and our own lack of freedom, both. What I'm saying is not a program for what to do. Always we ask what to do. It's our delight in doing what to do, because there is no answer to that. If somebody is rejecting what you're saying, if somebody is devaluing your most cherished beliefs, it's not about doing something. It might be, in a particular instance, it's about feeling something. It's about feeling the compassion for those conditions which have allowed that to happen. Maybe you would say something and maybe you'd say nothing, but the one thing that you would be doing by that recognition is not contributing to the problem. That's what you've been doing. And in the view that could be held by some of us, that we are all transparent to each other, and therefore what you don't say is known on an inner level, even if you don't say it, that the attitude of compassion is beneficial to someone else, even if you say nothing about it. If you can hold that point of view, then you can make up your mind when you're in a difficult situation, what you say to somebody or don't say to somebody. It's not about that. It's about the transmission of understanding that that person is not just opposing you or opposing your actions or opposing your beliefs. That person is in a prison of their own and needs your compassion. When we are willing to justify getting irritated by others' behavior, getting angry, getting frustrated and condemning them, blaming them, we contribute to the problem of loss of freedom. We contribute to the problem of imprisoning someone in their behavioral identification. It's like saying to someone, I believe that you are how you're acting. Okay, they are acting that way. Is that who they are? No. That is not who they are. That's what the behavior as a coping mechanism with life has arrived at. That. So do we want to contribute to that identification? No, I don't think so. But we have to get past responding to the behavioral level and know that by doing that, we are contributing to oppression and not to their freedom to become who they might be. And in the same breath, in the same moment, in the same way, when we do that, we are contributing to our own loss of freedom to be who we might be if we weren't judging that person, because we are part of them. And we lose that in every area of judgment, in every area of responding to somebody's behavior or words, as if that's who they are. We lose that. I would like to use the example of July 4th then to reconsecrate our internal vows that were taken by those who bravely and with limitations of their own consciousness, desired to create a new ethic for people and for governance at the founding of this country. No matter what their limitations were, and they were many, the ideals that were held for all people, in principle, if not in action at that time. The ideals were the ideals of equal humanity for all. And the ideals were also the willingness to do what was needed to overcome oppression. That's the meaning of July 4th. It lives on in the ideals that were present at that time. And it lives on in us if we choose to not identify with oppression ourselves. And now we can do that in the outer ways I've talked with you about, and particularly in the intimacy of our own life with other people, to not identify with the oppression that comes from not seeing who people are in their suffering, in their imprisonment. And then, when we generate or have a willingness to reconsecrate ourselves to that perspective, even though it may be invisible to everyone else in the world, our inner attitude to not go in the direction of oppression communicates itself to our collective consciousness. And we become larger, and the collective consciousness becomes larger, because we are one in that collective consciousness. So on this, what I'll call July 4th week, I ask that we reconsecrate ourselves to the vow that was taken at the beginning of this country's founding, to be the spokespersons for freedom for all, our own freedom and the freedom of everyone else, every group, every person, every being, and that we reconsecrate ourselves to helping that be achieved and to not contributing in any way that we can become conscious of to the force of oppression. May the ideals that were fundamental as part of this country's founding be blessed, and may they continue to live on within us as we move towards the future. May those ideals manifest as our willingness to live in sacred consciousness in our everyday life, enhancing the freedom of all whom we meet, and recognizing that those whom we meet are part of us and are essential to our own freedom to be. May this country and all of its inhabitants be a blessing for the world and a hallmark of the freedom to be oneself that the divine has given to every embodied existence. Om Namo Bhagavate, Om Namo Namaha.